Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Yelovich is an own goal. It's an own goal.
With your host, Joe Maka. Yahoo Sports. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Oh, it's
going
in!
Right now.
Ole, 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 ole.
Hello, this is Shahan Ahmed, and welcome to the Serie A Podcast. Okay, I'm just kidding. This is the FC Yahoo Podcast. Joe Lago is in the desert with his family. Today, I'm joined to talk about Christian Pulisic, among other things, by Joey Galina to my left.
We actually, Joe was going to be on the podcast, but the VAR system came on and showed us he was out of bounds, so he's not here today.
Also joining the podcast is Alex Baker.
Actually, the mic picked up something really inappropriate that Joe said last week, so he has a 4-podcast ban.
And Leander Sherlakins.
Now that the podcast is being run by Shahan, I'm officially joining the hashtag resistance.
In reality, what we're going to really get into a little bit later will be Lionel Messi and the ban, which was touched upon. But we're going to start with the U.S. national team. Now, USA, we talked about last week. We wanted them to get 4 points. That was kind of the bar that we had set for them. Well, they got 4 points. What did you guys see? And Leander, let's start with you. What in particular did you take away from these two qualifiers?
Well, what was so impressive, I thought, about that first game is that they hammered Honduras 6-0, and they did it in such a fashion that was so refreshed and so energetic and so joyful. That was really a national team that we hadn't seen in years and years. And I don't know that we ever saw them play like that under Klinsmann. And you know, since Arena's come over, obviously there's been a lighter mood around the national team. But it becomes sort of a chicken and egg thing, right? Where you wonder, now that Arena's in charge, can we just not remember the good moments under Klinsmann? And was Honduras so bad, or was the U.S. that good? I think those things tend to go hand in hand. Is when you play a strong opponent, it one of the things that makes them good is that you're not getting to play your game, and you turn in a weaker performance than you otherwise might have. So I think they both deserve credit for how they played Honduras, and we have to acknowledge maybe that the Hondurans kind of collapsed, especially in the second half. But you know, the expectations were ramped up so far after that first game that the 1-1 tie in Panama sort of felt like a disappointment. Whereas, like we said ahead of time, 4 points would have been a really good outcome. And somehow after that first game, not getting 6 felt like it was a little bit of a letdown. You have to also acknowledge that even though playing in Central America is historically really hard, the U.S. does have a very good record in Panama, where it's never lost. And in 3 previous qualifiers in Panama City or in Panama at all, it had won twice and tied once. But it's really impressive, I think, the way that Arena has turned things around so quickly.
Joey, were you disappointed with that second qualifier in Panama?
I think I was to a certain extent, and I think that I have to temper this because you have to remember where the team was going into these two qualifiers and the disaster of the first couple, leaving the U.S. at the bottom of the hex. And then, obviously, the United States looked really good in that the Honduras game. But I also think that despite all the injuries, you're still a better team than Panama. And after kind of a solid start where the U.S. sort of took the game to Panama over the first 5-10 minutes, you know, it just... it settled back into some bad habits. It settled into kind of ceding possession. And I know that eventually the States scored on the Pulisic assist to Dempsey, which was fantastic. But, you know, as the second half kind of wore on, Bruce Arena was clear. He started making moves, substitutions, tactical changes, where he's like, okay, we're happy with the point. And to see that after how empowered the United States was against Honduras, and I understand it's on home soil. I understand that it's probably against a weaker opponent. I was a little disappointed with that. And going back to what Leander was saying about the Honduras match, it's that underscores the difference right there between Klinsmann and Bruce Arena. Bruce Arena empowers his players, and Jurgen Klinsmann kind of hammers their egos into the ground and acts like he knows everything that's best. Like Klinsmann, for example, probably would have gone into that Panama qualifier and said, if you don't come out with, you know, 3 points, you guys aren't spit. Whereas Arena, his approach was probably more something like, hey guys, you know, it's all on you. Be what you want to be. Get out of this what you will. When once he saw the team didn't really have it in them for whatever reason to kind of push over the hump and get that second goal, get that winner. That's when he started making the changes. So I'm happy with how the team played and how it's back into fourth in the hex, but I also was left a little wanting by the performance in Panama.
Alex, we've touched or briefly mentioned Christian Pulisic. What did you see out of the kid? Seems like everybody's pretty excited about him.
Shining lights, horsemen in the sky. I don't know. Look, I think Christian Pulisic is probably the most exciting, certainly 18-year-old talent that we've ever seen on the United States team. You know, I saw a tweet from Derek Ray the other day who called him just about as exciting as an 18-year-old talent as he's ever seen anywhere. And I think it's pretty clear he's on another level from a lot of our established guys. Dempsey seems like he can play with Pulisic. Altidore has been a passenger in these last two games because he's just not on the same level.
Seems like everybody can play with Pulisic.
Not so much Josie, though. He doesn't seem to be quite getting into the play. That goal, I agree with Joey to some extent that we would have liked to have seen a better result against Panama, although for whatever reason, that's the third game in a row that we've drawn with Panama, to make of it what you will. But, you know, for that goal he set up for Dempsey, he held off Torres, who I know this is going to elicit some guffaws, was the best player in the MLS Cup final last year. He held him off like he was a training coach.
Are you guffawing? I'm guffawing. So yeah.
There are silent guffaws.
The
going
what
on.
Final?
I know you're both guffawing. You know, he held him off like a training cone to set up Dempsey for that goal. So I think the one thing you can't really criticize in that game was Christian Pulisic, who continues to excel in the chances he's given for the United States and for Dortmund.
Well, what's most impressive to me about Pulisic, as he insists that we call him, is the way he adjusts to things. I mean, it's so easy now to keep him to forget that he's only been a senior team player at the club level, let alone the national team, since January of last year. And just the way he manages to read situations when he comes into them and adapt so quickly is astonishing, because he had played tough away games before. I mean, pretty recently he played at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid with Borussia Dortmund, and he did very well there. So it's not like he'd never had a tough away game, and he'd been to the Allianz Arena at Bayern Munich, although he didn't actually play as far as I can tell. But to go into Central America is a very different thing. I mean, the threat there is less from the sheer number of people that are there or from the pedigree of the team you're playing, but it comes from, you know, bad refereeing referees who aren't going to protect you when you're getting kicked and pushed and shoved and hit after the play and hit away from the action. But it comes from that, and it comes from the fans being close by and throwing beer and all these things. And it usually rattles young players, and it takes them, you know, a half dozen times of going through it before they really get good at coping with those situations. And Pulisic plainly was taken aback a little bit at first, because Panama really manhandled him. And I felt like the referee just almost was obstinate about not doing anything about it. But he dealt with it, and he got that assist, and I couldn't find a single chance going back through that game that the U.S. had that wasn't created by Pulisic in some way. So that's one of those things, those little things that's so impressive about him.
What stood out to me watching that game was how he dealt with getting kicked and not having the protection that maybe you do have in a Champions League game. These are World Cup qualifiers, and this leads into international play. I mean, CONCACAF, say what you will about it, is not an easy place to play. There are some rash tackles. People are trying to get the World Cup. And for an 18-year-old to be able to stand up to that was impressive. Now, Joey, you are our resident Christian Pulisic leader of the fan club.
I wear that hat proudly.
What did you take away from these games? Did your fandom only grow further? What did you really see from these two games in particular? Because it seemed like this is when Christian Pulisic kind of entered more of the American mainstream.
Yeah, I was very encouraged, you know, all kidding aside. He's only 18, but, you know, he's got kind of this veteran sense about him. And for a guy who's that you know, wiry of a frame. He seems awfully tough to move off the ball. Just ask the Panamanian defenders on the goal that he set up for Clint Dempsey. You're almost sitting there. I mean, how many times did we say, too many touches, too many touches, too many touches, and we expected it to fizzle out? But his wherewithal and his composure to find Dempsey like he did was something beyond his years. And I was actually particularly impressed of all the things he did in the Honduras game. What set up the first goal was a missed shot by Pulisic that was poached on the other side of the net. And the run that he made off of the shoulder in a really tight window down the left side of the box, off the shoulder of the defender, and to get that shot off, I'm not sure an 18-year-old, you know, would usually try something like that, but he's got just such an acute awareness of the game. And obviously his assist to Dempsey on one of the goals where he kind of floated it over the top, and Dempsey did well, don't get me wrong. He took it with his shoulder and then he finished. But, you know, Pulisic saw that play develop, and I think that his ability to make those plays and his ability to have that sense on the field is tremendous. And going back to what you guys were saying, you know, he seemed a little wide-eyed about all the tough love, the Hazard treatment, if you will, that he was getting from Panama. And even though, you know, he kind of got fed up with it a few times visibly, it never got to the point where he was getting in other guys' faces too much. It never got to the point where it overtook his play and he let it frustrate him too much. And seeing that from a kid that's that age is just phenomenal. So yeah, like these two games have only increased my stock in Christian Pulisic.
Yeah, to piggyback on what Joey just said, you know, that assist for Dempsey, you've got 5'8", 139-pound Pulisic holding off 6'2", 194 Torres with relative ease. And I think you could kind of see an adjustment with Pulisic that, you know, early on in the game, he realized he was not going to get the same kind of protection from refs that you're used to in the Bundesliga. And so he said, okay, I'm going to do this myself. And yeah, he wasn't overly confrontational, but this is definitely a kid who's not afraid to get in someone's face and to stand his ground, which, you know, you add that to the skill and the finesse that he and the pace he has, it's, you know, it's pretty hard not to get excited about the guy.
So I know nobody wants to move on from Christian Pulisic, and it is Pulisic. He says his name. We've gone over this in previous podcasts.
It's Pulisic. It's just really hard. We're still settling into
saying
that.
Well, I'm just saying, we've gone over this in previous podcasts. However someone chooses to say their name, that's their name. In any case, we have to move on from Christian Pulisic and talk a little bit more about something else we saw, which was the midfield duo of Michael Bradley and Jermaine Jones. Now, there's some mixed reviews to that, and I want to start with you, Joey. What did you see about out of that pairing, which, you know, Jermaine Jones suspended the match before, so having him back in there in that Panama qualifier, what did you think of how those two played together?
Well, I was, you know, there was some talk pre-match that Jermaine Jones coming back into the side would kind of disrupt things a little bit. And it was taken from a standpoint of the fact that he hadn't played in the previous match. But I was never really worried about that so much because he had played with Bradley so much. He had so much experience with some of the guys who were around him. I was more worried about the fact that he continues, I believe he's 34 now, he continues to just kind of show that his best years are behind him and he's falling off the pace. And, you know, what's even worse is that Michael Bradley, his transformation into more of a defensive-minded midfielder into more of a number six as opposed to a box-to-box guy Klinsmann wanted him to be, or a guy who can get forward and make plays, which he still can do. But now, you know, that transition, well, now you've got basically two defensive-minded midfielders, because that's what Jermaine Jones he was usually good for. I mean, he has moments of brilliance like the goal against Portugal in the World Cup, but, you know, he's kind of more like this bone-crunching tackler who makes sure that there's order kept in the midfield. And if you've got two guys like that, it's almost like we've entered this territory where if Jones and Bradley are healthy and available, you play them, when that might not be the best solution going forward. It's almost name recognition at this point, but when you look at the play on the pitch, I don't think the results bear that out.
Yeah, Jones is one of the veterans. I think where you're increasingly asking yourself, do they still have it? And he is 35 now, and he'll be 36 before the World Cup next year. And, you know, it's a single game, and he has a body of work that's larger than this. But I feel like, whereas Michael Bradley, who's turning 30 this summer, I believe, he gets a lot of criticism because he does commit turnovers here and there, which I also think is inevitable because he has the ball so much. But whereas he gave a really good performance against Honduras, you know, Jones coming in that second game, he was a passenger for a whole lot of that game. And it seemed like any time Panama was dangerous, that he was close by and maybe culpable or somewhat culpable or partially culpable. To his credit, he did send that long ball that Pulisic ran down and eventually turned into that chance for Dempsey, albeit mostly through his own brilliance. But you know, this was a game where you kind of say to yourself, if he has a few more like that, the Jermaine Jones era might very much be over.
Well, we'll move on from this particular segment. But before we do, I want to get all your guys' thoughts. Do you think that the United States, given that, you know, they had 0 points going into these two qualifiers, now they got four. Do you think that they will qualify and through the hex? And it seems like Costa Rica and Mexico are in great position, and those two teams are probably going through. But after the U.S. beat Honduras, do you think that they'll catch them? What do you think, Alex?
I think they're in a good position, too. You can't predict the future entirely, but...
Well, I'm asking you to predict the future.
Yeah, I'm going to predict the future. I'm going to go with a yes. And I think that these two games succeeded in doing what was necessary to get them back on track, which if you know Bruce Arena, is kind of, it's what he does. He doesn't want to, it's a bit like Jose Mourinho. He doesn't really want to do anything more than is sort of necessary. I mean, I think Friday night was an explosion. It was a relief. It was like, you know, they were playing with this sort of unshackled feeling. Maybe Tuesday was a bit of a letdown, but it was a bit more pragmatic. But I think we all agreed they needed 4 points. They got 4 points. They're in a good position, and I think they're going to have momentum. And I do see them making it to Russia 2018.
Yeah, I think that this did went a long way toward making that happen. And I think the very next qualifier, which is on June 8th, with 3 points at home against Trinidad and Tobago, if those are won, then you can basically punch the ticket. You know, it's interesting. I think 538 or somebody did a percentage chance of qualification for the World Cup. And Mexico and Costa Rica, who are 1-2 in the hex, are obviously very high up there. But I think the United States actually has like an 80% chance in fourth, which is way higher than Panama's up there in third. And I think that one of the big things that the U.S. Honduras match was it was, you know, obviously you like to see the 6-0 result because of, you know, you want the team to play better and it's exciting for the fans, but that swung goal differential around big time for the United States after that Costa Rica loss. And now the U.S. and Honduras are level on 4 points, but the U.S. is ahead because it won that match, and it also, the goal differential is +1, whereas Honduras is now -5. So I think, you know, another couple results like that will be enough to see the United States at least in the number 4 worst case scenario, and then obviously like their chances in the playoff to get to the World Cup. So I say yes.
Going into these games, I thought there was a 60 or 65% chance the U.S. was still going to get to the World Cup, even though they didn't have any points, because CONCACAF, and we've talked about this before, but it's so forgiving. 3 out of 6 teams make it. The fourth goes to a playoff, which will probably wind up being against someone like Saudi Arabia or Iraq or like North Korea or someone like that, the fifth place team in Asia. So, you know, their chances were good, even without any points through two games. Now that they've gotten back on track, now that they've gotten a little bit of confidence, gotten some points, I am 100% confident that they make it to an 8th straight World Cup.
Well, moving on to a different area where it's not as forgiving to make it to the World Cup, Lionel Messi had a bit of a ban for cursing. Apparently, against Chile in a 1-0 victory where Messi did score, he apparently flung an insult or cursed, as he said, into the air at the linesman, the referee's assistant. And for that, FIFA actually gave him a 4-match ban, with only 5 World Cup qualifiers remaining. So Argentina, who are currently in 5th because he had to sit out the 2-0 loss against Bolivia, now are in serious jeopardy of potentially not making the World Cup. Now, this is pretty controversial all in all, and I think, Leander, you have some serious thoughts about why this is just completely coming out of left field and frankly should not have been a 4-match ban. What do you make of it?
Well, it's just weird. I mean, if you've been around pro soccer or you've watched pro soccer or, you know, have really consumed it in any way, you know that players cursing at refs and at assistant refs, regrettably, is part and parcel of the sport. It just happens all the time. Watch a Premier League game closely and watch the close-ups when players are arguing with the ref. And it doesn't take a very good lip reader to see the things they're saying. And that's not a good thing. It's a stain on the sport. But it's nevertheless something that's really commonplace. So it's just kind of odd that they would come down on Messi like that. By the way, neither the ref nor the assistant ref noted this in their match reports. This came about when the Chilean Federation, after they lost the game, sent TV footage over to FIFA and they decided to crack down. And for this to happen against the most famous player in the sport, I mean, you can't help but be a little bit of a conspiracy theorist and think that they're making an example of him for some reason. I mean, if FIFA wants to stamp this out, that's absolutely the right thing to do, and that's important. But to come down on Messi like that without precedent, with a four-match ban, which means that he misses 80% of the remaining World Cup qualifiers for an Argentinian team that's already in trouble, is incomprehensible.
Yeah, without Lionel Messi, Argentina has one victory in World Cup qualifying out of 8 matches. With him, they have 5 wins in 6 matches. That's 15 out of 18 possible points with Messi, 7 out of 24 without him. Argentina is a mess without Lionel Messi, I think it's safe to say. And to expect them to turn around and you know, they're in serious jeopardy of missing out of the World Cup altogether. And I can't even imagine. I mean, Messi turns 30 in June, so a year from now when the World Cup starts, he would still be 30, going on 31 during the tournament. To have a 31-year-old Lionel Messi, arguably the last time he'll ever be playing a World Cup in the prime of his career, not be at the World Cup and not have a chance to win. I mean, he is arguably the greatest player of all time, and that is the one blemish that always comes up on his record, is that he's not won a World Cup. He went to the finals last time, I remind you. To have him miss out because he cursed at a linesman during a qualifier is odd, to say the least. Joey, what do you think?
I read what was reportedly said on his behalf. We can't repeat it here. There was an F word. There was a piece of female anatomy invoked. But on the whole, I think we're all in agreement. You know, I made this joke the other day. If FIFA thinks this is bad treatment of a referee, I'd like to introduce you to a certain Chelsea football club. Sorry, Joe, you're not here, but I had to get that shot in because they're notorious for doing this, like crowding the referee, saying inappropriate things. And it's just, I can't for the life of me think of why they would want to choose this hill, you know, the expression hill to die on. This is more like a hill to live on in terms of legislating treatment of the referees, because you're making an example out of a guy who, again, is arguably the greatest player of all time. And let me go a little further into what kind of trouble it spells for Argentina. They're currently in fifth in CONMEBOL qualifying, and they're in the playoff spot. That's the last spot that has a chance to get into the World Cup. They still have trips, and Shahan, you alluded to this in your column, they still have trips to Uruguay in the next match, and also Ecuador to finish up.
Uruguay.
Wait, did we decide that last time? I can't remember.
We did clarify Uruguay? The pronunciation of Uruguay.
Okay. Uruguay in the next match, and there's still a trip to Ecuador. And there's kind of a game now of musical chairs, if you will, forming between 5, 6, and 7, and 8. Paraguay, Peru, who, you know, we should remind everybody, has finished third at the last two Copa Americas, Ecuador, and Argentina. And it's like, only one of those teams is going to be left standing without Messi. And considering Argentina's terrible record for whatever reason without him, then they're in very real danger of missing this World Cup. So for whatever reason, they're coming down on Lionel Messi for this, which is an absurd... I don't even know if it merits a one-match ban, let alone a four-match ban. I don't know what point they're trying to make, but the point that we'll remember may ultimately be Messi didn't have a chance to play in what could be his last World Cup.
Now let's be honest. We all watch a good amount of football or soccer, whatever you want to call it. Wayne Rooney's the guy who pops into my mind. Anytime he gets foul or he doesn't agree with the referee, you see him walk off with an F off.
Yep. There's F words galore.
That's standard. I mean, I understand Leander saying, you know, of course it's the right thing to get it out. Well, he's a father, so he has a different perspective now in life. I personally think that the way the world is going, cursing has become less and less. It doesn't really insult people the same way it used to maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago. It's archaic. You know, people in commonplace. The president of the United States used the P word, if you will, which was a curse word until he used it. Curse words are becoming more part of the regular vernacular. And so to try and say, hey, you can't say... He didn't actually hurt anybody. The linesman didn't mention it. That's the thing that I'm glad Leander mentioned, because that's, for me, was the craziest thing. In the referee and the linesman's reports, nothing was mentioned about it. FIFA took the video footage and employed lip readers, because there's no audio of him saying it. They're using lip readers to go back and, you know, special treatment for the best player in the world should be reserved for overlooking something like this. Instead, they said, no, you're the best player in the world. We're going to ban you for 4 matches. I think that's absurd. Alex, what are your thoughts?
I agree. I think that the ban is too harsh, too extreme. But I also think that it's sort of a statement on how pathetic is this Argentina team, that they've got Sergio Aguero, they've got Gonzalo Higuain. They can't qualify without this one guy. I mean, they should not be that dependent on Messi. The fact that he's
Dybala too. Don't leave out Dybala.
That's what I'm saying. This lineup, the fact that he's not there and we're talking about how they have no chance of making the World Cup now is really a sad statement about this team that was in the final 3 years ago. And because of him then, too, I think Argentina's not been, they've been underperforming for quite some time. But that said, I do think it's a bit extreme. But I think that Messi's excuse that he was yelling at the air has not done him any favors either.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a BS excuse. And
pretty John Terry there.
Yeah, I'll also add that they also have Angel Di Maria, who tends to get injured in tournaments, but he is healthy and he does produce for Argentina generally. And they refuse to still call up Mauro Icardi, who is just banging goals in Serie A consistently.
I think they look for players who play in bigger leagues, big teams.
In any case, I mean, they have a talent pool that they can draw from, and this should not be the issue. But at the same time, he is he's been arguably the best player on the planet for the last decade plus, and he is the captain of the team. So make an example of the. I mean, I understand what they lose when you take Messi away from the team.
Yeah, I just two quick points here to finish up for me. What you said about the treatment of a star player, in what other league would the quote-unquote preferential treatment, or whatever you want to call it, not favor the star player as opposed to doing whatever it could to keep them out there or, you know, keep them out of the headlines, things like that? And then the other thing is, to Alex's point, it's very good. For whatever reason, even with Messi, this team is second or third to last in CONMEBOL in scoring in terms of goals for. Venezuela has more goals than Argentina, and that is just terrible when you have the kind of talent that Argentina has. So Messi's obviously the main thing, but it is a bit of a damnation on Argentina's program that you need this one guy, however great he may be, or else you're in deep trouble.
Yeah, one of their remaining qualifiers is against Venezuela, who are last in the group. But earlier, when they played in Venezuela, Argentina drew. So there's and Messi wasn't Messi was not in that game. So there are absolutely no guarantees when Messi's not playing for Argentina. We've seen that throughout World Cup qualifying. Now, moving on from a disallowed player to a disallowed goal, or really what we're talking about are VAR. I think you might have heard the acronym, but it's video assistant referees. Now, other sports have had this, and soccer is finally getting around to employing more and more technology to help them out. We saw this with goal line technology, came in, and it's been a huge success. And now we're getting to where we had this happen in friendly. It seems like it's going to happen in the Confederations Cup and could potentially even happen in the 2018 World Cup. FIFA likes this. What ends up happening is when there's a goal, there's a referee sitting in a booth watching the video and decides whether or not it was a legitimate goal. Now, this happened twice in the Spain versus France friendly. The first one was Antoine Griezmann scored a goal that was given as a goal on the pitch. While they're celebrating, the referee checks his ear and there's a review taking place and then decides, oh no, there was an offside, goal disallowed. No real arguments or anything because it's coming from upstairs from video. Someone's actually watching the tape. I think that it worked pretty well, and everybody said, wow, that's a great example. We need to have more of this. Well, in the same match, we had more of it. Spain scored. Gerard Deulofeu gets in, puts in a goal. Linesman rules it offside. Referee says it's offside, but while they're waiting, took 40 seconds in total. He finds out it was a goal. Spain celebrates. We move on. Now, in both these cases, it worked. What did you guys think about video replay? And I'll start with you, Leander.
I think, like in any sport, it might need a little bit of refining where it's a little bit smoother and it doesn't slow up the game quite so much, because what we have seen a few times when video replay has been used is that it takes a little while as the game goes on to be able to be able for the ref to make that call. They first started using it in the Dutch league, and it was used straight away to send off a player, but there was like a lag of like 20 seconds there where play went on and then the ref had to sort of stop it and send the player off. So I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's promising. I also think that there's a certain charm to human error. from the referee, because that's part of sports and that's part of the drama, and it's entertaining in its own way, even though it can be terribly frustrating. But I think if you can do it in such a way where it's not so obtrusive, and maybe not do it for every single thing in the game. I think there are certain aspects of the sport that lend themselves to it, which we already have goal line technology, and you know, very bad tackles and things like that. But I wonder if it's taking it a little bit too far when you start doing it for offsides as well, because that's a play that occurs so often that you might really start bunging it up. So I think there's promise there, and I think it's a good development. I just think it maybe has to be edited and pared down a little bit to where it's quicker and where it's used sparingly at the most important parts.
Yeah, over the last, you know, I want to say actually last 3 years, I've probably written a couple columns on video replays and how I would like to see it implemented. So I've gone in depth on it personally.
I bet those really clicked.
I mean, at the time, I think they did, because I wrote them after there were some egregious refereeing errors. And a couple of things that I you know, rather than have, I think the De La Feo goal is an example of something where I would not have had video replay, because I would have let play just go on. It ruled offsides. It wasn't a goal. Move on. However, I think that when there is a goal, when there's something that happens to the point where it's given, I think that you should have a quick review to see if there was a handball, if there was a player offside in the buildup, but not past maybe two passes. I don't think you go back five passes to see if somebody was offside. I also actually think that there's an opportunity, from what we've seen with goal line technology, to actually have the sidelines act the same as the goal lines. If the ball goes out on the sidelines, we have the technology for the linesman to just look at a watch. That doesn't take any time. I think that it would be silly to not use technology. That would be very simple, not really stop anything. I also personally think that if there's a red card, and I think this is included in the video assistant referees, I think if there's a red card, I think you send the player off, you continue play, and someone reviews it. If it was something that was completely, like, without a doubt, where the referee was conned, then you let the player come back on. And I think you can play 2 minutes without a player while there's a review going on and just play on. It's better than playing the next 45 minutes without a player.
So kind of like a hockey sin bin kind of...
Well, I mean, no, the player sent off. For all he knows, he's gone. And I think it would actually tell players, hey, don't argue with the referee. Get off the pitch and get out of here, and it's going to only do you favors. And I think it could actually improve the conduct of players as they're leaving the field to play, because they know that it's getting reviewed. So if they feel like they've gotten conned, it'll come out. But I think that this is a good start, and we finally had a good example of where it worked. Joey, what did you make of it?
I liked it, and I think that this fight, Leander's a baseball fan, so he knows this. Like, one of the common refrains, not just in baseball, but, you know, this has been very vocal in baseball, is that you don't want to interrupt kind of the integrity of the game, whatever that means. You don't want to interrupt the pace, because that's how it's always been. And soccer is a little bit, you know, there's been a lot of changes tactically over the years that we could go into, and certain figures in the game that have kind of revolutionized the sport. But in terms of the actual legislation by referees and things like that, sure, there have been changes, but this is actually one of the bigger things I can ever remember to happen to the sport. And I think that I think it's a good thing. I think you do have to have a set number of things that you can review, I think, to the NFL on this. And I think it's a good idea to look to sports that have implemented replay and see where they've succeeded and see where they failed. The NFL has a specific set of plays that are not reviewable. So that we can, you know, Sean, you were mentioning a couple instances where you think maybe something shouldn't be reviewable. Leander, you said the offsides, you weren't sure if that should be reviewable. So yeah, like, as long as there's like a set number of those, I think I'm okay with it. And I think that during the game too, if you ask yourself, you know, you talk about, oh, the entire review took 30 to 40 seconds, something like that. I think that's actually better for the quality of the game, because it gives the players a blow. And even though I know you're not talking about an extended period of time, but, you know, if it's kind of like a heat break, if you will, if it's too hot, like we've seen before, you know, the players will be slightly more rested, however much, and that could increase the quality of play as the match goes later. And I just think that as long as it's specifically legislated in certain ways, then it can be very successful. And I would also ask, I think teams should be behind this, because who doesn't want to have a definitive system about how, you know, that can kind of rule and say what really happened? Because I would point to the Trinidad and Tobago and Mexico match. Jovan Jones was clearly onside for a goal that would have earned a point in the match for Trinidad and Tobago. Instead, it's taken away, and now they're, you know, bottom of the hex, whereas they would have been level on 4 points with the U.S. and Honduras. So I just think teams will probably want to look at it from that standpoint as well. But I am overall for it for the reasons I mentioned.
I emphatically disagree with this idea of having little breaks to have these video replays because it gives the players a breath. I think what makes soccer beautiful is that it's continuous, and what makes it well equipped to last in the future, unlike a lot of other sports, is that it's continuous, because I think that's a really slippery slope where before you know it, you're American football and you're kind of doomed.
Yeah, I will say in my columns when I did write about it, that was the main focus, was to not slow the game down or stop it. That's why I said, you know, a couple minutes without a player, better than everybody just standing around waiting for 2 minutes while the review goes on.
See, I think I see your point, but I also think we're not talking about too much time. It's not like we're going to stop the game every 30 seconds, you know. I'm okay with one or two of these per half, if even that.
I'm going to emphatically agree with Leander on this one. And actually do something I don't do that often, which is I'm going to quote Alexi Lawless badly, who I know...
My interest is piqued.
who I know tends to be against these kind of things. And to misquote Alexi, you know, part of what fascinates about the game of soccer is the controversy, is the bad calls, are the things that we talk about, and the talking points, and the missed goals. And you know, if you had VAR in the 86 World Cup, there's no hand of God goal. You know, some of the great defining moments of the game are its controversy.
It was a handball. It shouldn't have been a goal.
Well, but there you go.
Maybe that's the difference. I'm very stodgy about this.
Sure. And I know that that's an American sports thing, that, you know, to kind of want to forensically analyze every moment of sports. And I understand that. And I know that does alienate some, probably mostly American sports fans from the game, because they don't like the sort of perceived unfairness. But I just don't really get it. Like, why FIFA constantly feels the need to kind of want to change these things. It's, you know, this is the most popular game in the world. And yeah, some of the innovations, I like goal line technology. I think that has been mostly good. But I'm just not too crazy about the whole VAR thing for a variety of reasons.
The one thing I'll say, you know, you're saying this is an American thing.
I don't mean to come off that.
No, I know. But I'm gonna give you some food for thought, I guess. Cricket, which is by no means an American game, and is a game that was steeped in tradition, they went to video replay, I want to say 2 decades, maybe even longer than that ago, and it has worked gloriously in that sport. It's a staple. No one thinks twice about it. When it's a close call, the umpire just looks up, does the, you know.
But how many new markets is cricket making inroads to today as a sport? I would.
But what I'm saying is, for the sport itself, It is part of the sport to the point where no one who watches it has any problems with it. No one who plays it has any problems with it. And I agree with you that there shouldn't be stoppages. I think we're all in agreement that Joey is completely off his rocker here, thinking that they should have
a lot of things. But,
but I mean, no one wants to see the game get slowed down or stopped.
I still think the pace will be fine with a couple of those.
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, when a goal is given, right? So if a goal is given, generally teams are celebrating for the next 30 seconds anyway. So if you increase that to 45 seconds before, and frankly, that time should be added on at the end anyway. One thing that I actually am very adamant about is that the match official on the pitch shouldn't even be in charge of the stoppage time. There should be someone else clocking it, because they get it wrong every single match. They'll say, oh, I think I saw it in a recent qualifier. They said there's 4 minutes of stoppage time. The referee blew the whistle at 3 minutes and 30 seconds. He's the one who said 4 minutes. And there was probably way more than that in terms of stoppage time that should have been allowed. They get that consistently wrong. So I think that there's things in the game that we should actually try and get right, and these type of calls that don't take away from the clock running and let the game actually flow, I'm completely fine with. But yeah, I agree with Leander. You should not be flagging every time there's a flag for offside. You shouldn't be checking, even if it results in a goal. I'm sorry, the referees like messed up. To some extent, we're still gonna have those arguments, Alex. Like, there are gonna be some disagreements. You're still not gonna have everything reviewable because of the nature of the way the sport just, it flows. And that's the beauty of the sport, is that you get two 45-minute halves and they flow.
I think that's also. I mean, I agree with that. I think that what part of what makes it great is the fact that is that it flows. I just, you know, I don't think a break would hurt here and there too much.
Well, I mean, in cricket as well as baseball, there are natural breaks and there are natural stoppages to have these reviews between the balls, between the pitches, and you don't have that in soccer. And I would argue that if anything, they should find ways of making soccer quicker, because I've written about this. Young people, when they watch soccer, they don't consume it sort of in linear fashion anymore. They watch highlights and they, you know, they read tweets and they're sort of engaging with it in all kinds of different ways than from actually watching soccer. And sport in that sense isn't that well equipped to handle the way that people consume media and entertainment now. So, you know, make it quicker, not slower.
But isn't that true for all sports, Leander?
Yes. and most sports have declining viewership.
And soccer doesn't. It's actually one of the few that's actually increasing and growing.
So now they want to mess with it.
Yeah. I think it's time I revealed my impetus for all this. That Torsten Frings handball in the 2002 World Cup. If we had replay, the U.S. would have had a penalty at the very least and a better chance of going through to the semifinals. So that's my devious reason for all of this VAR stuff.
Hope you're listening, Torsten.
Yeah, wherever you are, Torsten Frings.
Thierry Henry would not be a villain either, so I guess.
Oh, yes.
Well, we'll move on from this, but, you know, in all this talk of qualifiers, we can't help but bring up Bastian Schweinsteiger and the World Cup.
Road to Russia, baby.
So now it's become a joke, and, you know, the Chicago Fire have these hashtags that they're showing Bastian Schweinsteiger, who just came over from Manchester United, Germany World Cup winner, just came over from Manchester United, joined the MLS. Sorry, MLS.
The MLS.
I can't say the MLS. I'm sorry. I apologize to Dan Garber and everybody
else.
Still
a long way to go.
In any case. So when he came over, there was a press conference, obviously, and there was a reporter who asked him if he thinks that they can win the World Cup. Now, a lot has been made of this because, obviously, Chicago Fire are a club team, and they can't win the FIFA World Cup. But he said the World Cup. Now, somebody actually caught up to him, the reporter. He's an AP reporter, right? So he's over there, and he explained. He's like, no, I was talking about the Club World Cup. However, because he's an American guy, obviously we jumped to, oh, this guy doesn't know anything about the sport. Now, he apologized and said, no, you know, I'm sorry if I offended anybody or anything. I was just trying to figure out if he had aspirations of winning, like, big trophies with his new club. That's... You know, I'm not claiming to be an expert by any means. Now, you can look at it both ways, right? You can say that this guy has no idea what he's talking about. He shouldn't be asking any questions. However, to me, I think that because he's an American, we jump to this guy is a complete idiot. He knows nothing about the sport, and we completely jump all over him. Now, I have more of a heart than Leander does. So, Leander, let's have your input.
I'm going to shock the world, and I'm going to agree with you.
Whoa.
Yeah. You know, the guy was there. He reported on it. It was a little bit of extra attention for soccer. Who cares? I mean, this is so stupid. Like, there are dumb questions in press conferences all the time, but we're so parochial about American soccer. We're so protective of this little band that we loved before everybody else and that we hate secretly that has now gone mainstream and is drawing interest from other places that maybe don't know quite as much about it as we do, that we don't see the forest through the trees sometimes. You know, Schweinsteiger came, and I think we all agreed that it was kind of a weird move for MLS and that he's old and he's kind of over it, and why are they still making signings like this? But nevertheless, it drew a lot of attention, and that's good for American soccer. So somebody flubbed a question. I don't really buy that he was talking about the Club World Cup, but it also doesn't matter. He was interested, and he was there, and he was covering it, and the AP took this, if that's where he's from.
Let me correct. It was AFP video journalist.
AFP. All right. So he's actually from a French outlet. He's from Agence France-Presse. So that I think further invalidates this criticism of him. I mean, even if he was an American, he was working for a European outlet. This doesn't matter. It was a little bit more traction for American soccer. And, you know, let's call it a growing pain and move on.
Yeah, I don't really buy that he was talking about the World Club Cup. I think, you know,
you can't even say it right.
I know, I can't even say it. It's a weird competition to begin with.
I rest my case.
But you know what this reminded me of? Is occasionally in MLS you do get these signings that kind of transcend the sort of inner circle of soccer coverage. And I can remember when being at an early Beckham press conference where one of the reporters there asked him what Brooklyn and Romeo were getting Siri and Connor Cruz for Christmas. So, you know, sometimes the soccer circus, it expands beyond what we're used to, and you get these people who are maybe don't know the ropes, and we can give the guy a break, I guess, on the one hand. And it has given us something to talk about, but I don't really buy the excuse either.
Well, I'll quote. His name is Derek Henkel, and this was his quote.
What's his Twitter handle?
I don't know. This was his quote. He said, "As a general assignment video reporter, I was seeking facts at a press conference. I get that I named the wrong trophy and greatly appreciate Schweinsteiger attempting to clean up the question for me. It was a classy move." So he wasn't trying to say he was infallible by any means. But at the same time, he said, you know, his motivation, according to the article, was, which is in the Telegraph, was to ask about whether or not Schweinsteiger wanted to win major trophies with his new club, which seems, you know, pretty standard.
I think MLS Cup would have been the proper trophy to put out there. It's pretty simple.
Did you say
MLS Cup?
The MLS Cup?
It's the only one, baby.
I think I'm glad you brought up Schweinsteiger's reaction, because I thought it was kind of cool of him. Not that we really expected anything else, but you know, can you imagine if his introductory press conference he excoriates a reporter for a question like that? I mean, it's not a good look for him coming in. So he definitely played that correctly. And I also think us as journalists, who among us hasn't? Even if he did mean the Club World Cup, who among us hasn't fumbled a question in a public sphere like that? So I think it's kind of easy to take pity on the guy, regardless of what he meant, because it happens. You know, that's just part and parcel of the business.
I've never made a mistake.
Well, you're not a mere mortal journalist.
All right, guys. Well, we're about to wrap this up. But before we go, I think we should just briefly let everybody know what the big games are this weekend in Europe. I'm not sure about the MLS or what's going on there, but... In Europe, anyhow, you know, Saturday has the Merseyside Derby, which is Liverpool versus Everton. Poor Seamus Coleman will not be playing because his leg was broken.
Oh, God.
Neil Taylor with a horrendous challenge.
That was a horror challenge.
But he will get less of a ban than Lionel Messi. Just keep that in mind. And then we have Arsenal versus Man City, which is a big one on Sunday, as well as Napoli versus Juve. Those are probably the three biggest games for me, and I just figured we would make quick mention of it. And I think that's all we got today. So thanks for everybody listening. And Joe Lago should be back. So please do not insult my hosting abilities too much. For Joey Galino, Alex Baker, Leander Sherlockins, this has been Shahan Ahmed for the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Thanks for listening. Ole, 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 ole,
ole, ole. Please edit that.